were beaten, but the gay community and their straight allies, against incredible pressure, stood up and said that in the United States of America, people will have the right to love whomever they want, regardless of their gender. Now, I've given you that brief overview of American history to make this simple point. Now is not the time to throw your hands up and say, I'm giving up, I'm in despair, I'm burnt out. I want you to think about the incredibly brave heroes and heroines in our history against unbelievably daunting odds who risk their lives for social justice, for economic justice, for racial justice. Now, the fight that we are engaged in now is a tough one, no question about it. We are taking on an extremely powerful billionaire class whose greed has destroyed the middle class of this country, whose greed says that it is not enough that the top 1% today owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. Not enough. They want it all. And what we are saying today, we are going to stand up to that greed, to that recklessness, and tell the billionaire class that this nation belongs to all of us. This democracy belongs to all of us. And when we stand together, when we stand together and not allow demagogues to divide us up by the color of our skin or the country we came from or our sexual orientation or our gender, when we stand together, there is nothing that will stop us. Thank you all very much.
Former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders speaking at the People's Summit in Chicago, addressing about 4,000 people. And that does it for today's show. If you'd like to get a DVD copy, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Charina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Amal Ahmed, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Dennis Moynihan, Ariel Boone, Vesta Goddars, and Anthony Manzo. And to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Meadows, Anna Osbeck, Matt Ealy, and Kaya Cirilla. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Gay Boo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the benefit screening of Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, on Friday, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center in Portland. Arresting Power documents the history of conflict between the Portland police and community members throughout the past 50 years. The film features personal stories of resistance told by victims of police misconduct, the families of people who were killed by police, and members of Portland reform and abolition movements. The screening is a benefit for the Portland chapter of the NAACP. Again, that's a screening of the documentary film Arresting Power, Friday, July 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Thank you.
8:04. You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. We are Lisa Loving and Jamila Bordone sitting in for Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Good morning, Jamila.
What's up? I just want to say people are wondering whether or not that song was a commentary on the U.S. Jimi Hendrix's version, the original version, if you are not sure of what that means. It actually is from the perspective of the slave owner. And so no one, particularly anyone who has been systemically oppressed, should even be singing that song at games or in any way, or anyone who believes in injustice shouldn't be even advocating for that song. But the Jimi Hendrix version, I don't know. That I feel like it does talk about the conditions people face and the fact that tax dollars go to bomb innocent people. I think it is a commentary on that.
It is literally crunchy.
Literally.
It literally is. Today, Jamila and I wanted to talk about how communities and institutions that are politically left of center in the great state of Oregon and beyond can join forces to push back against hate crimes, white supremacy, and the ICE. And I'm not talking about global climate change. I'm talking about immigration authorities who are, well, we'll get to that. Jamila, member of the All-African People's Revolutionary Party.
So,
yesterday, you guys had a Freedom School. What'd you talk about?
Yeah, so we have the School of African Roots, and it is the first and fourth Sundays of the month, 12 to 2 p.m. And our goal is to not only continue the work of organizations that did that before us. So the biggest example would be the Panthers. So they had Freedom Schools.
The Black Panthers.
The Black Panthers, yes, the original Black Panthers. They had Freedom Schools, they did film series. So we do a lot of the same kind of stuff. And we did some research and we saw that the highest concentration of Africans in the state of Oregon was in the New Columbia neighborhood. So we made the decision to go there, and we started a breakfast program, and the school is a continuation of that. Just really getting a notion of political education and representing a different type of ideology than the institutions which are Eurocentric give to African children. It is, many children can come, but it is definitely African-centered.
What did you talk about yesterday?
We talked about institutional trauma and the history behind it. And we talked a little bit about how music sort of tells the stories of our institutional trauma. And our next class, if you will, or our next session will be about connecting the histories of our music. Because just in the case that I've seen so many times, we have a lot of people just saying, you know, these rappers and a lot of the musicians that we're seeing today are sort of willingly reinstating this historical trauma by, for instance, there's Kodak Black, and he's saying, "I don't like dark-skinned women," and calling women out their names. And he said, "Dark-skinned women are hard to break." And that's the same language that slave owners use towards people who are enslaved. So a lot of folks are utilizing the same type of language. And so what we're doing is making those connections and ensuring that young people, because, you know, I'm not that old, but I'm older. And so I'm not going to be here forever. So we're just establishing it is something in which the future generations can look to and organize for our liberation. Just creating a better world.
Talking about the work of the All African People's Revolutionary Party of Oregon. Okay. So I'm just a human being and I'm kind of a media junkie. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to use that word in a disrespectful manner because it's real. I can't stop reading newspapers and media, especially digital media. And a couple weekends ago, I spent the whole weekend building a database of reported hate crimes in the state of Oregon. I think, if I'm remembering right off the top of my head, we've had 3 cross burnings in the past 5 years. One of them was in downtown Portland. Did you hear about it? No. I'm in a community of people who are trying to draw attention to how siloed we have all become in the state of Oregon by identity politics. You know, identity politics has a purpose. It's like when you are in a group of people that is so oppressed, you have to figure out a way to build up your muscles so that you can begin to take your place as a leader and making things happen in your zone. Having said that, in Oregon, we're all looking around and asking, why are there so many white supremacists in Oregon? How did two men get killed on the Max platform a few weeks ago, trying to stand up for someone and doing the right thing? And a third guy almost got killed, who's actually saying a lot of really intelligent things. Love that guy. But California's got a lot of hate groups, too. There's a lot of hate crimes in California. There's way more people there than there are in the state of Oregon. But there's something about Oregon and also Washington that is unique when it comes to the hate crime piece. And but I wanted to ask you, so as you talk about the work of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, I can imagine that there are people listening who would think, oh, they hate white people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
We just assume, as I'm walking down the streets of Portland or Eugene, we just assume that that there's just insurmountable obstacles politically between us as individuals. We just assume that. But what is your take on that? I mean, what do you think?
I think it's crucial to understand that there is a common enemy between all of us, and that is capitalism. So the AAPRP, or All African People's Revolutionary Party, understands that the common enemy is capitalism and all of the things under it. So you have patriarchy. And so under patriarchy, you have a lot of the anti-LGBTQIA, et cetera, sentiments. You have imperialism, you have colonialism, and all of these things that fall under capitalism. The next step to capitalism is fascism, which is what has been occurring over time in the U.S., but you're really seeing it come to fruition under an Obama administration and currently a Trump administration. And so one of the things that the party has helped to establish is the Marilyn Buck Abolitionist Collective at one point. And they are doing their own organizing, but the party did help to contribute that, because people would ask, oh, what can we do as white people? I know that you're organizing for your liberation, but what can we do? And our solution is always going to be organized, no matter what. Are you in an organization? And so there are plenty of white-led organizations. You have Surge, so there is MBAC. There are plenty of organizations doing it. The thing is, the white organizations need to understand they have that common goal as well. And you're seeing, between organizations that have different ideologies, it does become identity politics instead of understanding there is that common enemy which oppresses us all. And so the AAPRP is not a Back to Africa organization. Africa is a primary in the work that we do, because it is the source of our liberation. That is where a lot of the materials we get for the cell phones, etc., comes from. So in order to see liberation for everyone around the whole world, Africa needs to be liberated. So we do organize around that. However, it's also affecting everyone on the map. So it's not like, oh, we all need to concentrate and go to Africa. That makes no sense. That would be illogical. And so we do work with other organizations. We work with PCHIRP, which is specifically geared to the liberation of people from the Philippines. We work with anti-Zionist organizations, which have a ton of Europeans in them and Arab peoples in them. So we work with organizations in which their goal is also liberation. We don't go to those organizations and dictate how they do, just like people shouldn't dictate how we run our organization. But the clear goal is that we want to be liberated from the vestiges, if you will, of imperialism and colonialism. That is a common goal between a lot of these organizations, and we work together. So we work with organizations as well and form coalitions with Nation of Islam and just so many other organizations. So it's not like we're not like, oh, we're only going to work with people who think like us. That makes no sense, because there's a diversity of thought and experience. And to say that we want to work with people like us, that does fall into identity politics, and you're never going to get anywhere.
And just to be clear, we all need a strong sense of who we are. It's just, what's the end game? Once you know who you are, where are you taking that knowledge? And is there a point where we can, all of us who are, I guess I'm going to say left of center, I don't even know exactly why I'm defining it that way, but I guess that's where I started when I woke up thinking about what this show should be. But it's like there's a baby in that bathwater. And we do have, I think there's somebody on the line. I did want to say, listeners, what are you doing to organize with people who have different backgrounds than you or different ideas than you have? What are you doing to organize to push back against the hate crimes, the white supremacy, and the ICE? 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller. Hey, George, what's going on, man?
Hey, good morning, Lisa and Jamila. For several months now, I've been thinking about the discussions I hear on KABU and read, and they hit on all the right issues, and the ones that we know are always being mentioned at KABU are absolutely essential and central to whether we do or do not make progress against social injustice. But then I began to think, you know, there is one major factor in all this, which is just part of the dynamics. But the society operates as a dynamic entity of many, many factors. And if you leave a major one out, well, it needs to be addressed. Just how it should be addressed by activists is up to activists who follow these things very closely, and they have a good sense. But the factor which I think has been missing from the discussions, or it's been there, but it's been mentioned, how could I say it, here and there because it comes up in a particular issue, but it hasn't been placed front end.
What is it, George? Cough it up, man. Come on, man. Come on. What is it?
It is the economy, which is an economy which places investor, opportunistic, egotistic, selfish investor interests of giant corporations first. And it gives them a power over every one of the other issues in many ways. And so what I would like to suggest is that the discussions start to move toward mentioning we need to have substantial, we the people need to have substantial change here. And I'm talking, we need to move out of this economy which puts investors first. We need to put people first, and we need to socialize investments, socialize investments, socialize profits, take control of the economy. Now, that's my basic message. What do you think?
I think that, here, let me just jump in really quick. I hear people talk about that super intelligently all the time, and I agree with you, though. I think that the language people use is different so that they don't all come to the same table. I want to thank you for calling, and also look for Diane Freeney. Anything she does in the city of Portland, she's all about being a recovering investor, and she puts her money in really fascinating places. But what you were going to say, Jamila?
Yeah, so I want to respond directly to George. I think the first thing I want to say is it's not enough to fight social justice. You have to look at what the root cause of those social injustices are. And the root cause is capitalism. And you're referring to capitalism, but we can't just have a solidly class analysis. We have to look at all of those other things, because the foundation, the very foundation of what is called the United States, or we call it the United Snakes of America, the very root of the profit is free labor of African people. You can also talk about indentured servitude, if you will, and it's also the elimination, the profit off of the elimination of Native peoples of this country. So you can't talk about U.S. history. I didn't hear all of Bernie Sanders' speech on Democracy Now!, but if he didn't mention that, the very foundation of the building of the economy of this country is slavery, then you're not talking about U.S. history at all. And so if you can't acknowledge that, if you can't acknowledge how the economy was based in this country, if you can't talk about the roots of social injustice, then where are we going? So I think that's really crucial. We can't just say it's about class. And as a person who is a socialist, we need to definitely have a planned economy. And we need to have an economy in which the government understands the conditions and counts for everyone. So people are talking about the insurance. You need to have a planned economy in which everyone is accounted for and everyone has free insurance. So it definitely can work, but we have to understand the roots of where this injustice comes from and the foundation of this country and how this country is the way it is today and how it continues to profit.
This is an important point, and I'm glad George brought it up. And by the way, the number to call, it's 503-231-8187. And the question on the table right now is, how can communities and institutions that are politically left of center in the great state of Oregon join forces to push back against hate crimes, white supremacy, and the ICE? I think that that's what we're trying to talk about. How do we get together? We have different values. We have different ways of looking at things. We have different issues that are hitting us really hard. But how do we join forces? And it's interesting that George brought that up and that you had the response you did, because I hear this a lot from people who are radicals, radical activists who I respect very much, but I'm just going to say, they seem to miss the white supremacy piece. And you sort of have to stop what you're doing and lay that on top of all of it, because I just feel so strongly that we live in a post-apocalyptic nation right now. If you're African descent, if you're African American, or if you're Native American, this is the post-apocalyptic reality. And the rest of us are part of that too, right? I mean, it is not science fiction, it's reality. So it comes back to that issue of we have Nazis marching in the street of the state of Oregon. Last week, the Multnomah County Republican Party voted to use the militia as their personal security. So this issue of normalizing white supremacy in the whole state is threatening people's lives. It has this whole time, but there's something about the current presidential administration that's making it worse. And when Barack Obama was elected African American, this stuff really started burning in big flames. The racism that's so deep in our culture in the United States, it just really took hold. But there's something about President Trump that makes it, and I agree with people who say too that when you look at how our political systems work, this was inevitable. It's kind of like political climate change in a way. The more we push back, the hotter it gets out there. So, but the number to call, 503-231-8187. We do have another caller on the line. Edie's on the line. Hi, what are you thinking about, Edie?
I love everything you're saying, but I wanted to have you repeat several times for folks tomorrow's 12 to 3 at Peninsula Park. Your host can tell a lot more about it, or a guest. And I wanted to find out what other political actions and protests are planned for tomorrow. I know they exist. I don't know where they are, what they are, or how to align myself with them. And that's all I want to say, and hang up.
Thanks, Edie.
Are we doing the 4th of the Lie?
Yes, so there is the 4th of the Lie, and it's going to be pretty chill. We're just hanging out with our organizer comrades this year. But the thing about the 4th, and we call it the 4th of the Lie, I just want to talk about America. A lot of people, I don't identify as American at all, because American is an ideology. I am an African in America. I just want to make that clear. And if you identify at all as an American, you have to understand what that comes with. And you have to understand the ideology of this country. Do you identify with that at all? If you talk about, I'm an American that wants to change society, are you willing to uproot the society? It's really crucial. If you're like, I'm really upset at what's going on, I'm an American, what are you doing to change that? Are you in an organization which is contributing to uprooting that? Is your interest in returning the land to the people indigenous to this country? To me, that should be the goal of white people, ultimately, is like organizing to return the land to its rightful people. Because everyone else in this country is not native to this country. And I know people talk about genetics. Well, people who are indigenous and they're from Asia, but you know, America hasn't been around for that long. So the people who were here first are native. And so that should be the goal. Is there a call? Oh.
No, it's cool.
And even the term white, like that also comes with a set of ideologies. So if you identify with these titles, they come with ideologies, just as African comes with that. And so with all of that comes responsibility. And so think about when you say I'm an American, what does that mean for you? Because that comes with a history of white supremacy. So as an American, are you identifying with white supremacy? You might say no. But by default, you are. So just really think about that and think about the formation of this country, the fourth. I know Frederick Douglass wrote a speech like why Africans shouldn't celebrate the fourth. I was not considered a person at the foundation of this country. I don't think people shouldn't celebrate this day. People should be out protesting, if you will. But if you are protesting, make sure it lasts and join an organization. I'm going to maintain that for the whole hour.
Hey, if you just tuned in, we are Lisa Loving and Jamila Bordone sitting in for Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. This is More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. And the number to call if you want to participate in this conversation is 503-231-8187. The question on the table is, how can communities and institutions that are politically left of center in the great state of Oregon join forces to push back against hate crimes, white supremacy, and the ICE?
So can you describe what left of center is?
Right. And then I was going to ask you, what is organizing? Right?
Okay.
So what are our terms? What is left of center? I even as I look at those words, I don't know what they mean. So I want to reach out for people who care about society and who want to see people supported, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to people who are afraid of society and want to see society shut down. Yeah. That's kind of the dividing line. I don't want to talk too much, but somebody fronted to me an interview with Andrea Seabrook, who used to be a reporter for National Public Radio. Now she's a reporter for Marketplace. I have to say, I like that show. They've got a wealth and poverty desk. They've got a labor desk, right? They try to spin it a little differently, even though it is without question a corporate entity, right? Anyway, she talked about the new polls of American politics. She's not the first person to talk about this. She's not going to be the last. She's not the only one. But, you know, the way I look at it is either you're in to end this society or you're out. Most of us are out. Like, and I would, to borrow from Bernie or whomever, the 1% are the people that get the most, although I'm seeing a new debate that says the top 20% are bankrupting everyone else. It's the upper middle class. Sometimes when I read too much, probably think too much, right? And that's where Jamila is talking about music and culture, which is actually the real fabric of our minds, not the articles we read. But anyway, so I guess I'm thinking of the people that are part of my community, of my affinity, my group of affinity, are people who care about other people and want this to be a government, a nation that works so that people can thrive as opposed to people being massively incarcerated. So what's organizing?
Organizing is building relationships. It's if you are at a protest, you are mobilizing. It's not sustainable. You are protesting around one issue. Organization is assuring that the future generation see the result of what you are fighting for. It is when you are at the protest, getting information and building groups which sustain themselves. It's looking at the system as opposed to one issue, which is the symptom of the system. And so that's what organizing is, just the 20-second description.
All right. And we have a couple of callers. Let's go to the phone lines. Sunny's on the line.
Hey,
Sunny, what's going on?
Good morning. I'd like to see something along the line of neighbor unions that are groups of people across the city organized, whatever their class, their color, their political background, they're good neighbors to one another, because I think we really need that. We will probably see greater social chaos and even planetary chaos, unfortunately.
So, Sunny, what is the difference between your solution and, say, neighborhood associations?
Maybe a little bit more personalized, such as people getting together for trade and share fairs and getting acquainted with basically an understanding of the needs of their neighborhoods and how they can stay solid to help improve their neighborhood and help their neighborhood stand through mega social turmoil, which may come. Just basically kind of like, I don't care if you're red or you're a blue, I'm your neighbor. The important thing is that we keep things together for peacefulness for the children, and let's just maintain a good neighbor connection of respect and solidarity.
So, Sunny, I wanted to ask you, too, are you participating with any kind of organization? Are you getting out there and doing anything?
I'm kind of starting to form something like this amongst other like-minded neighbors who are basically really interested in maintaining and improving strong neighborliness.
Right on, Sunny. Move forward with purpose and verve and know that we're behind you.
I want to say really quick, if I ever meet a blue person, I'll come find you.
Rock on.
And also, I think it's important to reach out beyond like-minded people, because like-minded people are always going to just repeat themselves. You have to reach out to the people who the white supremacists are going to organize with.
Yeah,
that's who you need
key.
To be talking to.
Hit those get those people first.
But I'd like to say also, as a person who's mixed race, I've seen the choice of cruelty come out of the mouths of just every single color of person, and we've got to remember that. The most grievous example I ever saw was someone assuming that I was perhaps of their race while they pointed out a child of another race, that they were evicting that child and that child's family, and they were going to get them out of the complex and make sure that, you know, they weren't going to be living here very long. This was not a white racist pointing out a family of color. This was a person of color trying to get rid of a white family and a white child, the only ones in the complex that were white. And so this can occur, and it's just not acceptable. But I do believe that we need to build in the history, the whole history for Americans, and that we can handle the whole history, and that even amidst much ugliness, there's quite a lot of beauty from all of us.
Right on, Sunny. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we're standing behind you. I also want to point out Portland Tenants United is doing some amazing things, organizing entire apartment buildings. There are people out here doing this. So rock on, people out there doing this. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. We're asking today, how can communities and institutions that are politically left of center in the great state of Oregon join forces to push back against hate crimes? I think we have another caller.
Another call. Okay.
Is there another caller? Zane's on the line. What's on? What's going on?
Hello. My name is Zane. I'm just calling. I'm actually from Hawaii. I moved to Portland.
Nice.
In 2011, and as an indigenous Hawaiian, you know, just living here in this place, I'm definitely feeling like, because we're in an urban space and enduring the culture shock of being a Hawaiian here in Oregon, it's really, cable is really key in pushing these types of movements where it can inspire some kind of change for me to bring back to my home. So, like, I just wanted to talk about that. Like, for example, the breakfast program. Like, I just try to look back. I'm 24. So just trying to look back at, like, my upbringing. If I had some kind of, like, cultural consciousness before school, cultural consciousness time, you know, it would have made such a big difference in terms of the way that I would move politically. Now, like, my mom, growing up, has always been involved in social groups. She's, like, a big part of the Rotary Club. She's always been a Leo. And, you know, just seeing, like, that type of movement, I've had certain feelings about, like, just community groups, because I understand it's political, whether it's giving out scholarships to certain kids in the community who have connections with family or certain things. So that's kind of been my dilemma, is like, how do I navigate this social movement organization thing when I see like certain people getting preferences within this type of thing. I know these are a few issues, but I just wanted to, you know, like kind of throw out like my thoughts on how, you know, even Hawaiians, you know, like here, we kind of feel like we're, at least me as a Hawaiian, I'm trying to improve our relations so that people can help understand the history, where we're coming from, and kind of break down the stigmas that we as Polynesians face.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say thank you and big respect to Cable.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Zane. I think it's really important, if you don't find an organization that connects with your liberation struggles, you have to form one. And it's not easy. Organizing isn't easy, which is why most people don't do it. But find there are Hawaiians in Portland. Find those people, connect, look on the internet and form an organization. I really do want to say to the comment about racism, non-white people cannot be racist. I don't care what anybody says. Racism, we are conditioned to look at racism as, well, it's because you are having a preference towards your race. No, racism is a historical systemic system. It is something which is ingrained in the laws that are created. You have racism and white supremacy. You have to look at the laws that are created. And why does Dylann Roof get to eat Burger King and he gets a trial in the jury of his peers, if you will, and then Tamir Rice gets shot in 2 seconds? That's the racism and white supremacy. It is systemic. It is historical. It's not like, well, I don't like that person because they're white. That's not racism, like in the sense I'm talking about. You could be, that's bias.
Bigotry,
and that's not, I don't agree with that. But we can't conflate bigotry with racism in that way. We have to understand the historical narrative of white supremacy and racism in this country to understand how racism works. So when people say, oh, well, people of color can be racist, like, I am not taking away Sonny's experiences, but I just get frustrated when I hear people saying, black people can be racist, people of color can be racist, without acknowledging the historical and systemic analysis.
And just to follow up on that thought, I think the point of that is that when it comes to organizing and when it comes to trying to change the course of history of the state of Oregon, which is traditionally a Klan state, mm-hmm. right? I mean, white supremacy is, it's baked in. It's somehow it's in the soil or something like that. The way to do that, instead of reacting to each other individually, you will not believe what that guy said to me on the train. It's more like, look at the institution. Who did he work for? Or was he just himself being a jerk? You know, and before the end of this hour, I would like to talk a little bit about white people and what we can do to actually cultivate a garden that brings collaboration around. But we do have a couple of calls. Let's go to the phones. Mike's on the phone. Hi, Mike, what's going on?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. First of all, I want to address the notion that black people can be racist. In order to be a racist, you have to have the power to bring about your racism. And black people, politically speaking, we don't have the power to bring about racism. We don't control any institutions or anything like that. That's in a black person being a racist and a white person being a racist, that white people have the power to materialize their racism. Also, you know, when you talk about Oregon and fighting racism, first of all, gentrification have pretty much destroyed.
You're cutting in and out.
Pardon?
You're cutting in and out.
Yeah, we want to hear every word, Mike.
Okay. Now, I'm saying, first of all, let's deal with gentrification in Northeast Portland. It done destroyed the black community. And black people lived in Northeast Portland. I mean, I came here in the 60s, and I saw all the hard work that, like, the Albina Minstrel Alliance and people like model cities that worked really hard to try to make Northeast Portland a really nice place to live. And so all that hard work that these black people did in that part of town for years ended up, all the new white folks that moved in the Oregon, they just came in there and just took over all of that and pushed the blacks out in Southeast Portland. And all that hard work that black people had done for years in Northeast Portland, white folks now are the recipients of that. And so, and these new people that come into Oregon, they have no historical reference about Portland, especially the black community. And when with their Eastern and all these different attitudes that they bring in from these other states, and they come in and they're racist and everything, it's worse than it's ever been. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with Vera Katz. And when she when they were starting tax abatement programs and stuff, and where white folks started moving into Northeast Portland and their taxes was frozen and all of that, that helped create gentrification. So I don't, you know, when you talk about dealing with racism, you got, like you said, you have to change the institutions down.
Can I ask you a question, Mike? So, and that goes back to what Jamila said about returning land to the people that owned it, actually, in a way. But let me ask you this. Could there ever be a Truth and Reconciliation Commission for black people in Oregon?
Well, you know, part of, you know, I don't know. It's complicated. I think a lot of the illegal immigrants that have came into Oregon, I think they are clouding the situation, because I see white folks more, I see them more, they're more ideologically, I think, agreeable to, I guess, like an immigrant to come, white folks to go down with signs and their fight for their right to be here in this country, and they march and they fight, and these people are not even citizens.
Mike, I'm going to respond to that. If a person needs a document in order to validate humanity, then you are taking on the ideological framework of the oppressor. That is what I have to say about that.
It has nothing to do, you know, it has nothing to do with nobody's talking about their humanity.
You're saying that they come here and they don't have document. Like, why does a document need to honor your humanity? Why do you a person if you need a document?
Hello?
That's my question. Like, a lot of Africans are saying, well, these illegals, like, what makes them illegal? First of all,
Hello.
I don't know what's going on, but if you need a document in order to be declared a person, then we are not a humane society. That is what I have to say today.
All right.
Well, you know something. What I'm saying is that they get a different response from the white community than black people.
They don't. I as an organizer, they do not. I'm a person. Are you in an organization, Mike?
Of course.
What organization are you in?
Hello?
You keep cutting in and out, my brother. So I would love to hear what organizations Mike was in, but we can't have this idea that, I know there's another call, I just want to say really quick, please, we can't have this idea that in order to be declared a person, you need a document. You're taking on the ideological framework of the oppressor if that is how you live your life.
I want to take a minute and say, I want to say this super duper respectfully, because it's not my story to tell, but I had mentioned that I spent a couple weekends ago just building a database of reported hate crimes in the state of Oregon. There's about 150 incidents going back about 10 years. That's a very, very, very small slice of all the bad things that have happened. But a lot of the hate crimes are happening against immigrant people. If you believe that white people are treating immigrants differently than black people, actually, a whole bunch of those black people are immigrants. I just have to say that. But also, it's not true. And we're seeing, especially female human beings wearing hijab are actually getting physically aggressed in the street all the time. And the people from the immigrant communities, they don't even feel empowered to call the police when they're raped or robbed because they do not know what's going to show up at their porch. Now, that's something that's a straight ahead parallel between African-American community in the state of Oregon, at least, I think, all across the country. But you're not hearing a lot of these stories because people are not telling them because they don't want to be othered in public. And it's horrifying. If you just tuned in, we are Lisa Loving and Jamila Bordone. We're sitting in for Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. This is More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. Do we have more people on the line? We're going to go back to the phone lines. LJ's on the line.
Hey,
LJ.
Hey. How are you?
Alive.
Yes, you are. How's it going, Parkchester?
All right. I am moving back to New York, but that's a different story. What's your question?
All right. Here's the deal, Jamila. When I first came to town, back in the 70s, there was a vibrant and very, very strong African community here, Lower Albina. This town was the greatest venue for jazz on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So what happened was they decided, the powers that be decided to knock down all of the beautiful homes that were owned by Afro-Americans and put up a Emanuel Hospital. And then to add insult to injury, they destroyed more of the black community by deciding to put in the Coliseum, which they use a couple of times a year. All right. From my point of view, it seems that when the black community, when the African community is cohesive and viable, It makes the occupier, the white class, I'm very, very nervous.
Yes.
So, and I don't know whether you recall this or not, but there was a thing, there was a situation called redlining.
Yes.
Where the banks would refuse to loan money for development in African neighborhoods,
yes,
et cetera,
et cetera. Yeah, so
now the black community is scattered all over the place. They're out in Beaverton. They're out in East County. There's no cohesive African community here anymore.
Actually, I would say that's an exaggeration. I do have to interrupt you there. I want to go back, LJ. We know the history of gentrification in Oregon. We know this history. What are you doing to organize with other people who maybe don't share the exact same views as you do? Are you in an organization? Yes, you are. Talk about it.
I am with a group called the Radical Elders Reading Group.
Mm-hmm.
We meet weekly over at, in other words, on Thursdays from 1 to 2:30.
Right on.
The last book that we are finishing up now is called White Trash, the 400-year-old untold history of class in America.
Have you read Settlers? If you haven't read that book.
What was that?
Settlers, the book called Settlers, Settlers. You should read that in your book.
Right on. Well, thanks again for calling.
But I have read a lot.
Thanks again for calling, LJ. We're going to go grab another caller. You're awesome. I just love all the people who are calling. I always love it when Mike calls. Mm-hmm. I don't always agree with Mike, but I always appreciate your point of view. And I hope the next time I get to be behind this microphone, you call again. The number to call is 503-231-8187. I do think we have some more callers. Different Mike.
Different Mike.
Hey, Different Mike, what's up?
Yeah, this is a Different Mike. Thanks. I just wanted to say thank you. I got halfway through this, so I'm not sure what the lady's name is that's speaking with you.
Jamila.
Camilla?
It's me, Lisa Loving, and my best friend, Jamila Bordone. It is Jamila. Us. We are together today.
I just, I wanted to say that I appreciate what she said about previous caller, the one before that, saying about talking about a document to be legal here. I totally agree with what she had to say. I think it's a ridiculous argument that anybody needs a piece of paper to be a legal person on a piece of land. We're all in this together. We should celebrate our diversity. And no man's an island. You know, we need to take care of each other. And that's the only way we can move forward, because we can't get rid of people that we don't agree with, and they shouldn't have to get rid of us. We just have to come together and do the best that we can.
Although, in fairness, my sister did get rid of that one guy. I'm just saying, you can't sometimes get rid of people, but sometimes there's a baby in the bathwater. Mm-hmm. What were you going
to
say, Jamila?
I think it's not just enough to, I know you came in on a certain point, but I want to continue to reiterate, as long as I live, it's not enough just to get together with people. You have to organize people. You have to join an organization for justice. And there are plenty of organizations.
That's what I mean by getting together.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah,
it means something different for different people, so I wasn't sure.
Okay. No, obviously. I just think that we're hearing people on this radio station that they pretty much all agree with each other for the most part, and I'd really like to talk to people that do not have my perspective. Mm-hmm. And even though it's shocking, and I can't understand them at times, we need to hear that, because we need to hear the other side, and I'd really like to get other callers like that in on KBOO, mm-hmm. because I'd like to listen to a conservative radio just to, even though I think it's ridiculous and insane sometimes the things that they say, I want to know their perspective, you know, just to understand them, because I think they need to understand us and where we're coming from, because we're all human beings, and
Well, if you want to know their perspective, check their bosses, and their bosses are the ones who own the resources. Look at the Bilderbergers, look at those people, because the people that we're quote-unquote paying attention to are the low-hanging fruit. We need to aim higher for looking at where the oppression actually lies. So, yeah, definitely, if you're not in an organization, join one, and I agree with you. We need to engage with people we don't necessarily agree with, for that common goal. So thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling,
thank
Mike.
Thank you.
Again, we are Jamila Bordone and Lisa Loving. This is July 3rd. We're sitting in this morning for Cecil and Celeste, More Talk Radio. We're talking about how people can get together, people with maybe different viewpoints, to push back against the white. I'm specifically talking about the white supremacy piece. I mean, I feel like it's at the root of so much of this stuff, Jamila.
I think the left and liberalism is a huge issue, because it is based in white supremacy. And so what we're seeing is a lot of people going, well, I'm not that way. I'm not that way.
I didn't enslave your ancestors.
Exactly. So we're seeing a lot of that, and the blame on these other news channels or these other individuals. But you're causing just as much damage, because you're not centering the voices of oppressed people. I know you wanted to talk about that. And I just wanted to say, the other word for gentrification is colonialization. Maybe you have to look at it that way.
You know, I've been on deadancestors.com checking out my genealogy for like 5 years now. And what really strikes me is the entire movement of my ancestors across this continent is gentrification.
Yeah.
So we have another caller. Let's talk to that person. Karen's
Hi,
on the
Karen.
Phone. What's up, Karen?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to bring in a really important thread to the immigrant justice perspective, and that is that illegality is the way that the ruling class, that the wealthy owners, control the wages
yep.
of people.
There you go.
It helps to keep the workers terrified,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it possible sometimes not even to pay them, but to pay them very low wages for very, very hard work, in exchange for which the immigrant worker gets exposure to pesticides, gets chronic illnesses, gets late stage illnesses, gets depression, etc., because they can't get health care either. And the average age at which a migrant worker dies is 49.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, in the general U.S. population, it's 79. And we need to really look at the levels of oppression for these folks. I'm in a bunch of organizations, including the NAACP and the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice and a Quaker Racial Justice Group. Yeah. And all of these, they're intersecting forms of oppression. And my heart really goes out to the gentleman who called and said that he thought that white people were maybe better to immigrants than to black people. The reason my heart goes out is because that way of seeing things doesn't include the perspective of the migrant worker, and it doesn't include the ways in which those folks are being exploited, that all of us, women and people of color and all groups that are oppressed, have much more in common with one another than we do with the people who are controlling all the strings.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks for calling up and
Thank you.
You know, have a great day, and thank you too. For what you're doing.
I always appreciate it when Mike calls because, again, I always think for the whole day about whatever Mike said. Mm-hmm. Seriously, every day. And I think that what people really are afraid of and what they really dislike is globalism itself. When I hear people who feel that they, you know, that immigrants are getting more than they do, that's what I think that I'm really hearing them is react and respond to globalism itself. We're beginning to think about running out of show.
Okay, I just want to with this idea of patriarchy, because you're seeing a lot of women step up. We're in an age where there's so much information, and patriarchy, a lot of people, patriarchy and feminism. And so just as much as patriarchy harms men and those who perform patriarchy, white supremacy hurts people who identify as white. And it is a larger system at play. It's set up so people play against each other, and we have these individual enemies. So we don't look at the common enemy. We have to understand there is a common enemy playing us. And we have to do organization and political education. And the perfect example of that is the NRA ad that just happened.
That ad is freaking me out.
And so thank you. It's playing on a ton of fear, and it's based on white supremacy. All NRA is a political action committee at this point, and they're playing on fears of the what they did in the 30s, and it's like, oh, and so and then you have there's so much to talk about, just the invisibility of African people, where Brittany Robeson was murdered, and they're saying, oh, it's road rage. But you're seeing all these other cases of white supremacist murders, and even the voices of the young women who were on the MAX were not centered. It became about the victims. It became about the white supremacists. It's still centering white voices. And so I'm just going to leave it there and have you end this.
And have me end this. I want to, this is More Talk Radio. We're starting to zero out on this show. Happy something tomorrow. I want to maybe Interdependence Day. Maybe think
about Imperialist Holy Day.
You know what? Take your day tomorrow and go up and talk to someone that you maybe disagree with and figure out some kind of common cause with that person maybe. Mm-hmm. But I just want to go out. I'm a white person. I want to say, white people, listen to people of color. Listen to what people are saying. Don't pour your opinion all over them. If you're a white woman like me and you're talking to a woman of color that's younger than you, don't tell them what to think. This is just the things that I've been dealing with in the past couple weeks. So you are listening to KBOO Portland. I have been Lisa Loving, and you have been
Jamila Bordonettis.
Continuing to be those people. Stay tuned next time for more talk radio next week. Stay tuned right now for Old Mole, Locust Focus, Health Watch, and Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, oh Lord, oh, the we'll be right back.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Fest, June 30th through July 4th, from noon to 10 p.m. Tune in to hear sets from Big Head Blues Club, Chris Isaac, Corey Henry and the Funk Apostles, the Pimps of Joy Time, Bofar Katuri, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival benefit for the Oregon Food Bank. Saturday, June 30th through July 4th, noon to 10 p.m., every day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and the role played by the KBOO Board of Directors is essential. Here is an opportunity for you to join the KBOO Board and become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all of our members. Please consider applying to become a KBOO Board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm or stop by the station to pick up paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 9th, 2017. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community, and want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground.